Grow Great, the podcast, episode 4025. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here. Today it's about integration. It's not just a tech problem, it's a people issue as well. And we will do it next. Business executives regularly consider API. You know what API is. It's that application program interface. You encounter it. Well, there's a lot of websites that will use Facebook or Twitter APIs, meaning if you have a Facebook account, if you have a Twitter account, and you want to go sign up for some other kind of an app or some other kind of a service, they will use Facebook or Twitter or something else, maybe Google Plus, in lieu of your email address for you to sign up. So it just gives these applications and these softwares a way to communicate with one another. In business, we have to consider these things because our enterprise software, it has to play nice with a variety of other products that we use to operate our businesses. Maybe it's a project management kind of an application, but we need to piggyback that onto our ERP. And well, we need it to work. We need it to integrate. Even on our work computers and our tablets, as well as our cell phones, we need all the apps that we use to work together with each other. We're frustrated when that doesn't happen. In fact, just today, I got an invite from somebody via some online conferencing, you know, video tool. Problem: the invitation would not work with Google Calendar. Don't you hate it when that happens? Yeah, me too. So I was, you know, hacking and doing all this work around to try to get this stupid invitation onto my calendar. I use a program called Sunrise Calendar that is great integration with Google Calendar. But, you know, you got to be able to get into a calendar program. I finally did it, but it was cumbersome to say the least. Open source and universal connectivity, those are the order of the day. And that's why we have technical experts to help us navigate our integration needs. Fact is, we often don't even know what we need. And very often, as business people, we don't even know what's possible. And so enter the experts, and they help us better understand what's possible. They better help us understand how something might be possible. But, you know, integration isn't just something that we need with all of the apps and all the hardware and all the software in our lives. It's equally urgent that we consider the integration of people in our organizations. Now, the key element of integration, it all centers on one fundamental goal: to get it all working together. We want our technology to play nice together. I want this invitation that I get to this web conference, I want that to play nice with the calendar tool, Sunrise Calendar, that I use all the time. And it integrates very nicely with Google Calendar. But when I get an invitation from this offbeat web conferencing tool, one that I know, but I'm not familiar with, it's not the de facto standard. And there are a couple of those, really, I'm frustrated. It is not playing nice, but we want things to play nice together. The same goes for people. He's really good at what he does. I just wish he'd play nice with others a little bit better. Business owner says that to me about one of his star employees, a star employee, mind you, a man with some prowess who was important to him, who was important to the firm. And so for the next half hour or so, this CEO, this owner, is telling me a few stories of how this person's behavior is really disruptive to coworkers. And by his own admission, the CEO's, this star guy likely had a negative impact on at least, according to the CEO, at least four other employees. And so when I ask if he can quantify that negative impact, he says, I don't know how I could possibly know for sure, but I suspect it's significant. And so I ask him, okay, well, I realize that we're kind of guessing here a little bit, but would you say that his negative impact is less than or greater than, I don't know, 25% of each of these other employees? And he does not hesitate. Very quickly, he says, oh, I'd suspect it's at least 25%. I mean, you know, again, there's no way to know, but I think it could be as high as 50%. And I worry that any of those four could leave at any time. I'm sitting here thinking, well, you've got employees who, by your own admission, four of them at least, who could be potentially operating only at 50% capacity. I didn't say this, but I'm thinking this, right, as I'm sitting there. Well, okay, why would you even care if they leave? But here's what we've got. We've got a star employee. That's how the CEO described him. I didn't describe him that way. I don't even know this person. And that's based solely on this employee's performance. His personal productivity is high. And so the CEO and I continue to try to quantify the impact on these other four employees who suffer low productivity because of the star player. If each employee has a dollar amount of productivity, and, you know, it could be anything, just figure out something that you can measure. But if these employees have a dollar amount of productivity based on 100% capacity, then what does 50 to 75% capacity look like? Well, we played with some of those numbers, right? We're sitting here and got our phones out using the calculators. And now, all the while, we know that we're just speaking in real harsh generalizations, right? Because I'm just basing it on whatever anecdotal evidence or gut feel this owner has. Doesn't matter. Really doesn't matter, because it gave us something to look at. It gave us something to consider, and it gave us some starting point to try to quantify the impact that this quote unquote star player might be having on other workers. The four employees, they didn't all share the same capacity. But as it turns out, the CEO, and he's using his own metrics for our discussion, he says that he feels confident that the overall negative impact on these four employees is in excess of $1.2 million in revenue, top line revenue, for the first half of the year. First half of the year. He figures it's going to be somewhat higher than that for the second half. He figures if 1.2 is the number for the first half, second half number is going to be bigger than that. He settled on a harsh realization that his one star guy could be, I'm not saying it is, but he could be costing his company over $4 million in lost productivity, top line revenue for four employees. Okay, so I'm a simple guy. Boil this down to simple math, and I ask the big question. Well, if your star walked out the door, what do you lose? Well, he's directly responsible, says the guy. He's directly responsible for about $1.3 million. Now, he's probably going to exceed that this year. Okay. Pick a number you feel comfortable with. Let's call it 1.5. Okay. Well, the math is simple then, assuming that the CEO has any kind of a grasp on these metrics that remotely are close. He's trading $3 million in lost revenue productivity from four employees for $1.3, $1.4, $1.5 million in star performance from one. Hardcore proof of the high price of integration failure. People integration. So the business problem is pretty simple to define. Yes, we're assuming that these generalizations are ballpark. You're willing to trade $3 million in top line revenue for half that, for 1.5. So you're willing to write a check for $3 million in order for somebody to hand you a check in return for 1.5. Yeah, well, good luck with all that. Integrating people is not just a challenge for M&A work. It is applicable to every business. I know some people in the M&A space, and the good ones, they do worry about integrating people. They do worry about integrating culture. But this isn't just the domain for those guys and gals. It's applicable for all of us. Tech problems, they're bad. They are frustrating, just like my calendar problem. People problems, way worse. Way, way worse. And as bad as it may be to have some software or some app that doesn't work well with something else that we lean on, those aren't nearly as vexing as having people who don't work well together. Is there room in your organization for toxic people? People who may perform at a reasonably high level in their own performance as our so-called star player, yeah, but they have an adverse effect on other people. Racehorses versus plow horses. Now, let's be clear. I'm not talking about racehorses, those high-performing employees who require a degree of pampering and special treatment. Because those of us who have run sales organizations, I think we know this racehorse-plow horse analogy pretty well. We want a stable of racehorses. We want people who are terrific rainmakers, people that are capable of bringing in clients and revenues and dazzling our customers. And like literal racehorses, these people expect things. Well, no plow horse is ever going to dare expect what these people expect. Being treated special is important because they know and they feel that they are special because, well, look at the results. That does not make them toxic. That does not make them detrimental to others. That does not make them a drag on the culture. They just need to feel special that they're part of an exclusive group. And you know what? They are. And I have zero problem treating them special. Question, does special mean that we're unfair? No, it doesn't mean that at all. Fair and equal are not synonymous. So let's be real clear about this. You just need to get out of your head right now. Fair and equal are synonymous. They are not. An employee with productivity to the 3 times what his coworkers are is deserving of different treatment. That is completely fair. It will not be equal to what those that are performing at 3 times less deserve. And the issue and any other issues that may stem from that might require some management, no question. They might require some process alignment. They might require any number of things, but that's very different than a racehorse that is responsible for personally hindering the performance of coworkers. Last year, and for some reason I was reminded of it as I was preparing for today's show, I read an article. It was late last year. I'm putting a link to it over in the show notes. Just go to growgreat.com, find episode 4025. I'm putting a link to this article. It was about a CEO who considered 2 fundamental options for growth, and he answered for himself and for his company. And here's the quote from the article that I thought was, well, it's applicable to today's show. Here's what he said. To continue to grow further. That was the answer to the question, well, what do you want to do? I want to continue to grow further. One can win a race either by running faster or by breaking the other runner's legs. I believe in the first option. I do too. I do too. One can win a race either by running faster or by breaking the legs of the other runners. And he's choosing to run faster. Now, let's apply that. Let's apply what he said to our subject and see if it can help clarify the challenge. We can have team members, racehorses, who outrun their coworkers, or we can have team members who outrun their teammates because they're breaking the other runner's legs. The first is acceptable. The latter is not. Okay, well, how do we integrate these people? How can we have high-performing people working alongside lower-performing people? Well, let's talk about that. And let me give you a handful or less, some steps, some things that you can consider. And again, come on. As with everything, I'm not saying there's hard, fast rules, kind of, sort of. But you need to think about this. And you need to do what you need to do. First, determine and set standards. Way too frequently, I encounter CEOs and other business leaders who just are unwilling to do this. And frankly, why they're unwilling to do it, it doesn't matter. I mean, does it? Why does it matter? What valid reason could exist to avoid determining and setting standards? I can't think of one. And if you can, share it with me. Please, please share it with me over at Twitter. The real reason that I often uncover why owners and why business leaders fail to determine and set standards is nothing more than fear. Fear that some employees will resist. Fear that others might create problems, meaning they might complain, they might create strife, they might quit. And so are we to assume that standards or expectations must always be fraught with fallout? Well, I don't know, maybe. I mean, after all, in a classroom of 30 students, there are going to be some students who are straight A students. And the other students are going to think, well, their teacher's pet. And those other students, well, there's two fundamental differences. They either don't put in the work to be A students, or they don't have the capacity to be an A student. So they either choose not to be an A student, or they just can't perform at that level. So we shouldn't expect anybody in that class of 30 to perform at A level? It's ridiculous. No, teachers need to expect every student to do their best, right? Some of those students, a B might be their best. Others, a C might be their best. But you and I both know there are going to be some C students. They could be A. They just don't want to put in the work. Isn't that what happens in your company, or isn't that what you want to happen in your company? Don't you want to expect every employee to do their best? We're wise enough to know that everybody can't perform at the exact same level. That's okay. It's okay, provided that everybody can perform at some basic level that's necessary so that our enterprise can be profitable enough to sustain itself. I mean, if we've got a small sales team of 6 people, and 4 of these are not generating enough revenue to warrant or to offset what we're paying them, well, we've got a problem. And we can be nice and we can go with the flow, but we're quickly going to be out of business if we've got 4 out of 6 sales guys that they're not even earning what we're paying them, because everybody loses. Or we can establish some standards that everybody has to meet in order to earn the privilege of continuing to be part of our team. I have a question. Do you want to be part of a losing team or a winning team? Now, I've never heard anybody say, oh, well, sign me up for that losing roster. That's the one I want to be on. No. Here's the truth of it. Losing teams they really don't care who's on the roster. I mean, they don't likely have a performance standard. Maybe it's a co-ed rec softball team where friends are playing together. I've known some of these. Maybe you have too. Right? They just want a nice evening together. Winning is not that's not why they're together. Okay, the standard is pretty simple. We're all close friends. Now, it's not a great standard for winning games, but it is a great standard perhaps for fun. But here's the rub. If you're not in their inner circle of friendship, you don't get invited. Because that's why we're together. We're close friends and we want to play on the same team. Well, I want to be on your team. Well, there's a problem here. You're not a real close friend. On the other hand, if you're building a team to win the championship trophy and get the t-shirts, close friendships aren't the main standard. First, you want good players. Part of determining and setting standards is knowing why you're together in the first place. Now, this is going to sound strange. I was even a little bit reluctant as I was jotting down the notes for today's show about this, but it's just true. I think it sounds strange to know or to hear me say that there are business owners and there are CEOs that really don't know why the team is together, but it's true. And I know it's true because I have spent too much time in the office of some who just couldn't fully articulate it because they really didn't know. It's just not something that every business owner, that every business leader has fully considered, not when it comes to people. And I'm going to give it to you in a single word, and the word is purpose. That's the issue. What is your purpose for being together? Is it to make sure everybody that comes your way, or even everybody who gets hired, that they have a place to come every day? Is it to make sure that you provide an opportunity for people to do their very best work? Well, those are dramatically different purposes. You're going to fail at determining and setting standards until or unless you first come to terms with why you have people in your organization. Why do you have these specific people? Why are these people still here? Well, let's go back to our classroom of 30 students, shall we? And let's decide that we're going to break up this class into smaller tables of five. We're going to have six tables. There's going to be five students at each table. Now, let's assume that we've got six straight A students. That's 20%. And let's assume that at the other end of the spectrum, we've got 20% who are at or near failing. That's another six students. Five people at a table, remember. But we've got the bulk of students who, well, they're average or slightly above or below average. And let's call that the other 60% or the other 18 students. Got it? How are you going to segregate those students? What's that seating chart going to look like? You've got six tables of five. You've got six straight A students. You've got six students that are at or near failing. And you got 18 that are somewhere in the middle. And that middle is a pretty broad range, admittedly, from high B's to, let's call them low D's or high D's. How are you going to group them? What's that seating chart going to look like? And why are you going to group them one way and not in another? You're going to do it because you have some purpose or you have some intention in mind. I don't know what that is, but you'll have one. You'll figure one out. If you put five of the straight A students at one table, then you necessarily leave one of them out because there's six of them. So what do you do with the sixth person? And why would you do that? If you put five of the six failing students together all at a table, well, you know what kind of trouble you're asking for there. It's an integration problem. You have to integrate students together with some purpose in mind. And as a CEO or a business owner, you can determine why you've got people together. I'm just simply encouraging you to figure that out and know what it is. Now, that isn't going to make it valid and that isn't going to make it wise just because you consider it and you do it. A teacher could easily congregate all the best students together and the poorest students together. But you can't get them all together because the math just doesn't work out smoothly. Somebody's going to be left out. Somebody's going to be left by. And then what are you going to do? Well, in large part, it depends on what the teacher is trying to accomplish. Let me give you a hint. Fear of hurting the feelings of any single student or any subset of students is not a good, valid reason. It's cowardly. Because it sacrifices the well-being of the classroom for a select few because the leader lacks courage. Don't be that leader. I would also argue that you're not even serving that student. You're certainly not serving the students around them. Know why you have people on your roster. Know what expectations you have for everybody to be part of the roster and then enforce it. One of the standard things that I do, especially early on in an engagement, is ask an organization about their non-negotiable standards. I've done it for years. That is, what are your standards that will cost people their jobs? And let's eliminate immediately anything illegal, anything immoral, anything unethical. Performance-based. What performance-based non-negotiable standards do you have? No, I get it. You're not expecting everybody to perform at a straight A level, but you are expecting everybody to perform at some passing grade level. What is that? And quite often people say, they shrug. They don't know. You need to have that. And you need to hire for it. You need to train it. And you need to expect it. So that's number one. Number two, don't compromise. The second you move off of a standard, you lose the standard. When that co-ed rec softball team that made up of close friends, that one that I described earlier, when they start seeing that just one player is frustrated because, well, losing sucks, they're dead if they don't head that off. They can either remind that friend why they started this team to begin with, and they can all reinforce, this is what we agreed to. This is what we signed up for. So if this isn't working for you right now, then hey, let's part friends and you're welcome to go. You can go get on another team. We're not going to be offended by that. Or they can compromise and they can decide they're going to shift the focus of the team by ramping up the pressure on team members to perform better. That is a poor choice. That last option is not a good option because it involves compromising the very purpose of why they got together to begin with. It's also poor when you do that inside your organization. Once you've got your purpose, stay the course unless, this is a big one, unless there's some valid reason to alter it. Don't alter it because of a teammate or few. They get some different idea. Because if you do compromise it based on that, you're letting them break the legs of their teammates just so they can outrun them. Is that the culture you want? No, I don't think so either. Because a culture of leg breakers, there's a name for a culture of leg breakers. We call them the mafia. It's not who or what you want to be. Third, cut toxic and poor performing players. Oh, forbid. That's right. I said it. Cut toxic and poor performing players. Some players are not worthy of being on your team. It does not make them bad people. It doesn't make your place a bad place to work. It doesn't make you a bad boss. It's just the reality that, you know, one size doesn't fit all. Look at any professional sports league. During trade deadlines, and they've all got them, sometimes you'll see a good, even a great player get traded away and you think, man alive, the guy's a stud. Why are they trading him away? Well, maybe their performance in one city and on that team, it doesn't match the money they're being paid. Last season, they were putting up way more points than they are this year. They're in a funk. They move to this new city. We see this quite often. They move to this new city, this new team, this new environment, and poof, they bloom. That change of scenery, that change of teammate, maybe that change in a coach is exactly what they needed. It's just a better fit. Sometimes players are cut entirely because they just don't have the skill sufficient to occupy a roster spot. There is another player more deserving. There is another player more capable of contributing more to the team. When you're assigning those students to their tables, like you're going to think how to best integrate the students to make each table as strong as you can. If you're wise and you want to provide students a table where they can be their best, yeah, that's what you want to do. But unlike the classroom, your business likely has some failing students who shouldn't even be in the classroom. Now, teachers don't have the option. They can't cut students, right? In school, we do the really stupid thing. We give them a do-over. We hang on to them a little bit longer. We don't cut them. Teams can and do cut, and you should too. In fact, if you don't cut players based on their contribution or their lack of contribution to the company, then you are failing to serve the company and those employees who are ably serving the company. I would argue you are being a miserable, colossal failure as a steward of the company. Remember, racehorses don't want to hang around plow horses. They know they're thoroughbreds. They don't want to have an F student sitting at their table. Why would you think that you've got a star employee who ought to be awfully happy being tethered to some poor performing employee or some toxic employee? They don't. They resent it. They don't understand it. They don't think it's fair that you even keep those people. And in time, your culture is going to pay a heavy, heavy toll if you harbor poor performers or toxic employees, and I'm lumping them together. The good performers, the potentially good performers, they're going to begin to wonder, why should I break my back to do good work? In time, they're just going to leave, and you're going to be stuck with a stable of plow horses, which is fine if plowing's your business. But if winning races is your purpose, you're never going to win. This is a critical, critical step for two reasons. A, poor performing team members, they drain energy, they drain resources, they damage performance-based culture. They just do. B, holding on to poor performers, it demonstrates that high performers, well, it's not really about performance. It's about something else. I don't know what that is, but it's clearly not about performance because you're hanging on to poor performance. So it's called human resources, and it's called human resources for a reason. People are an asset. That is, they are a positive force, or they're a liability. That is, they're a drain. They're a resource fully capable of propelling our business forward or fully capable of bringing our business down. And just like any other resource, people aren't all equal in their skills, their experience, their personality, their capacity, their potential. Bringing out the best, bringing out the very best in people is job one of every leader, every CEO. Serving employees of the company has got to be a priority for the owner, for the CEO. No, customers can't come before employees. Not if you're going to have an outstanding company. Not if you're going to be an outstanding success. Fourth and lastly, feed the performers. Listen, it's commonplace to enter a C-suite and to hear about the problem people. I was thinking about this the other day. The sheer volume of time devoted to discussions about people who are creating problems in the workplace, that alone ought to be strong enough to signal that this is not the way to go. Habitual complaining about Frank in accounting or Joe in purchasing or Margaret in planning, it becomes part of the company game that's played every single day. And meanwhile, Frank, Joe, and Margaret, they are ruling their respective workplaces with toxic behavior. And it's a little bit like the kid shooting spit wads in class. Yeah, I'm old. Kids did that. Do they still do that? Probably not. They probably do far worse things today. You know, there's always that disruptive kid, that kid that never does his homework. is never prepared, is just a slackard, and is always cutting up. And guess what? Always getting all the attention. And maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the point for these employees. Well, you can buy into that and you can give them that attention, just like you've been doing. Or you can decide that you're going to follow truth. That's right, truth. And the truth is, it is more profitable, it is more fair, and it is more valuable to feed the people that are meeting or exceeding your expectations and your standards. That's the truth. Don't fool yourself into thinking that your resources or your assets, they are in this unlimited supply. Now, consciously, you know better. I'm not sure unconsciously you do, though, because your actions kind of betray it. Because you can still lean toward thinking that, you know, the wheels, they'll stay on. You know, I'll just leave well enough alone. It'll work out. No, it won't. Time's going to run out on you. And the people, the good performing people left in the wake, well, that's just going to be senseless. Because you can do something about it. You can jettison the weight that drags down your company performance while bolstering the energy of those who have the ability, the desire, and the willingness to take your company to a higher orbit. And you've got people like that. You've got people that desperately want to get to the next level. The top performers, and even those who would be top performers, they're waiting. They're hoping. They're hoping that you will finally do what needs to be done. I see this and I hear this all the time. The poor performers, they are banking on history repeating itself. They are banking on the fact that your fear is going to continue to paralyze you to do anything except what you've always done, and that is to tolerate them. You know what you need to do? Surprise them. That's what you need to do. You need to integrate good performing people with great people. Good performing people with great people. And some of the good ones, yeah, they'll become great. And no matter, great performers value good performers. Everybody will perform better and you will attract higher talent when integration means that you don't tolerate just any kind of behavior, just any kind of performance. About a week or so ago, a software developer commented to somebody who wanted some software integration. And he says to the guy, you need to update to a more stable solution. That software isn't valuable enough to be integrated into your ERP. And there it is. The V word. This client evidently had some older legacy software that he had used for many, many years. And now he is trying to get it to play nicely with his high-end updated ERP. And the developer, he points out this obvious to him, truth. Today, you've got many more valuable solutions at your disposal that are worth integrating into this fancy ERP you've got, but this legacy software, not worth the trouble. Daily, we have to make decisions on where we're going to put our resources, where we're going to put our energy. And unfortunately, sometimes when it comes to people, we're like this ERP client who's trying to integrate some older legacy. And I'm not talking about age here, but some legacy software that's probably not been high value for a long, long time. The developer with the candid nature that some of these guys tend to have is like, well, you just need to fix that. You need to get a higher value solution that's worth the integration. You need to do that too when it comes to people. Always, 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 always take the road to high value. That's the message. A little longer than normal. Thanks for hanging with me though. Go to the website, growgreat.com. I've listened to any number of episodes. I'd like to hear from you, know what your feedback is. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review over at iTunes if you care to. I don't hawk that much, but I'd greatly appreciate it if you find any value here at all. Now, I don't want a one-star review. I'm not an idiot. I want a good review. I want glowing reviews. I'm coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, where currently it's stormy. We've had a stormy spring so far. Lots of rain. Poor people in South Texas, they're literally swimming in it. Flooding and all kinds of stuff. Hope you're well. Reach out to me through social media if there's anything that I can do to serve you. Are we connected at LinkedIn? If not, just go to connectwithrandy.com. Connectwithrandy.com. And I will bid you adieu. Have a great weekend. Greetings from inside the Yellow Studio.